Hothouse Flower has captivated readers worldwide with its raw exploration of forbidden love and personal liberation. This New York Times bestseller has developed a cult following among young adults and romance enthusiasts alike, with celebrities like Emma Roberts and Shay Mitchell citing it as a favorite beach read. What makes this book particularly compelling is how it tackles complex themes of family loyalty, mental health, and self-discovery against the backdrop of media scrutiny and wealth. As the third installment in the Calloway Sisters series, it stands out for its adrenaline-fueled romance and unflinching portrayal of trauma recovery, cementing Krista and Becca Ritchie as masters of emotionally intelligent new adult fiction. At 17, Daisy Calloway navigates life as a young model, her independent spirit constrained by industry expectations. At 25, Ryke Meadows, estranged son of a wealthy businessman, pursues extreme climbing and embraces life's challenges. Their paths intersect when Ryke becomes a support person for his half-brother Lo, connecting him to Daisy through her sister Lily's relationship. Their relationship evolves naturally. Ryke becomes a trusted mentor and friend, recognizing depths in Daisy that others overlook. They develop a close emotional bond, with Ryke providing support during difficult nights when Daisy struggles with sleep disturbances. Despite their growing connection, Ryke maintains appropriate boundaries out of respect for Daisy's age and his family obligations. "There's nothing inappropriate between us," Ryke explains to concerned family members. "I'm being responsible." The situation is nuanced. He admires her resilience, optimism, and ability to lift other spirits, while prioritizing his role as a protective figure. Their dynamic carries emotional complexity. During a conversation in the garage near Daisy's motorcycle, Ryke acknowledges her challenging nature. "You're quite the rebel, Calloway," he remarks, maintaining professional distance while she tests boundaries. Daisy shares her disappointments in relationships, while Ryke emphasizes the importance of mutual respect and understanding. Everything changes during Daisy's professional engagement in Paris. The separation affects them both deeply. When Daisy faces a professional crisis involving inappropriate conduct by a designer, Ryke immediately travels to support her, finally recognizing his genuine feelings. Their reunion in an emergency stairwell transforms their relationship, as Ryke admits, "I want to remain a constant in your life." Beneath Daisy's carefree exterior lies profound trauma. At 18, she suffers from severe insomnia and night terrors, relying on Ambien to achieve even half sleep. During these episodes, she screams and thrashes while her eyes remain open, fighting invisible attackers. Ryke becomes her protector, showing her his gun and ammunition before bed to reassure her of her safety. The source of her trauma is gradually revealed throughout the novel. After her sister Lily's sex addiction became public, Daisy's former friends, Cleo and Harper, cornered her in an elevator with a dildo, attempting to sexually assault her while threatening to make her life a living hell if she didn't comply. Though she refused, the subsequent months brought relentless bullying, condoms filling her locker, boys physically harassing her, and former friends spreading rumors that she was a closeted sex addict like her sister. This trauma manifests in various ways. Daisy develops paranoia about locked doors and windows, struggles to sleep alone, and engages in risk-taking behavior as a form of escape. Her modeling career becomes another source of anxiety as she's pressured by her mother to maintain an unhealthy weight and appearance, culminating in public humiliation when a designer strips her naked backstage, claiming she's gained weight. Healing begins when Ryke encourages Daisy to express her suppressed emotions. In a pivotal scene on a bridge over Carnegie Lake, he joins her on the dangerous ledge and pushes her to release her pain. "Scream it," he demands. "Scream everything you've been holding in." The cathartic moment transforms her, restoring her light as she clutches onto him and finally lets go of her buried feelings. True healing comes when Daisy finally confides in her sisters about her assault and subsequent trauma. As she finishes her story in tears, Rose and Lily comfort her, encouraging her to tell her therapist everything. Rose reminds her that while Reich is a pillar to lean on, Daisy must move forward herself. For the first time in months, Daisy feels lighter, like she can finally breathe. Daisy's journey towards self-determination forms the emotional core of the novel. At 18, she spent her life pleasing others, modeling to satisfy her mother, maintaining a perfect public image for the Callaway brand, and hiding her true self behind a perpetually cheerful facade. Her rebellion manifests in small ways, riding motorcycles, dyeing her hair, and seeking thrills that momentarily free her from her gilded cage. The turning point comes when a violent incident in Paris leaves her with a facial scar. Rather than being devastated by the end of her modeling career, Daisy feels an unexpected sense of relief. "I don't love modeling," she finally admits to Reich. This physical mark becomes a symbol of her liberation from her mother's control and the expectations placed upon her. As she travels across America with Reich and their friends, Daisy embraces her newfound freedom. In a symbolic act of self-determination, she asks Reich to cut her hair with his knife, shedding the long locks her mother insisted upon. After cutting it to collarbone length, she celebrates by hanging halfway out the car window, feeling the wind in her newly shortened hair, a physical manifestation of her emotional liberation. When confronting her mother on the plane ride home, Daisy stands her ground. "I've spent so long pleasing you that I've become so depressed." She refuses her mother's suggestions about college, asserting she needs to discover her own path without parental input. Though her mother blames Reich for these changes, Daisy defends him while acknowledging the truth. The experiences with him helped her find her voice. By the novel's end, Daisy has begun to envision a future on her own terms. She and Reich discuss their shared dreams: travel, adventure, eventually marriage and children. Though still struggling with her trauma, she's sleeping better and feeling safer surrounded by family in their shared home. Her journey isn't complete, but she's finally ready to rise and embrace her authentic self. The relationship between half-brothers Reich Meadows and Lauren Hale forms a crucial emotional subplot. Born a year apart to the same father but different mothers, they grew up separately. Lo with their alcoholic billionaire father, Jonathan Hale, and Reich with his manipulative mother, Sarah, forced to use her last name rather than his father's. For years, Reich resented Lo for having the life he believed should have been his. During weekly meetings with their father, Reich repeatedly refused to meet his half-brother. This changed when Reich witnessed Lo being attacked at a college party, realizing Lo wasn't the privileged golden child he'd imagined, but someone broken by living with their alcoholic father. 3 years later, their relationship balances between rocky and stable. Reich serves as Lo's sobriety coach, but their bond runs deeper. "I can't explain why I love him so much," Reich reflects, "except that he's the only one who understands what it's like to be manipulated by our father, and his soul needs love more than anyone else." This fragile brotherhood is severely tested when Lo discovers Reich's relationship with Daisy. Lo feels betrayed, accusing Reich, "I didn't accept you into my life so you could bang my girlfriend's little sister." The confrontation culminates in a physical fight where Lo punches Reich repeatedly, unleashing years of complicated emotions. The turning point comes when Reich finally explodes with the truth. "I fucking love her." He explains how he fell in love with Daisy over their 2 years together, how watching her with other guys was like drowning in fucking salt water and lighting me on fire. Though still angry, Lo offers a peace gesture, walking beside his brother as they rejoin the girls, saying, "I'll get over it. Just give me fucking time." Their reconciliation deepens when Lo asks Reich to help review comic manuscripts for his publishing work. When Reich expresses surprise, feeling like Lo's third choice after Lily and Connor, Lo clarifies he came to Reich first, wanting his different perspective. This moment strengthens their brotherhood as they find middle ground despite their opposite viewpoints on life. By the novel's end, the brothers run side by side, perfectly matched in pace until Lo pulls ahead in the final mile, outrunning Reich for the first time, a symbolic passing of the torch as Lo grows stronger in his sobriety and Reich no longer needs to be just his brother's keeper. The six main characters, Rike, Daisy, Lo, Lily, Rose, and Connor, navigate a complex web of media attention following the public exposure of Lily's sex addiction. What began as a private struggle morphs into a relentless media circus, with paparazzi documenting their every move, tabloids dissecting their relationships, and social media amplifying every rumor. Their personal space shrinks as photographers camp outside their homes, follow them to restaurants, and even track them to medical appointments. This fishbowl existence creates unprecedented pressures on their relationships and mental health. During a seemingly private camping trip in the mountains, they perform a cathartic ritual of burning magazines containing false narratives about their lives. Each headline represents a different violation of their privacy. Lily burns an article claiming she's spiraling out of control after being photographed buying condoms at a pharmacy. Connor methodically destroys multiple publications detailing how Scott Van Wright profited from their leaked intimate videos. Rose sets fire to a Vogue piece that painted her as an ice queen and ruthless bitch in the fashion industry. Daisy, the youngest, confronts tabloids suggesting she's following in Lily's footsteps by allegedly sleeping with multiple men. The media's most damaging allegations target Jonathan Hale, with several outlets publishing unsubstantiated claims that he molested both Lo and Lily during their childhood, accusations they vehemently deny. These false stories cascade into real-world consequences, exemplified when Rike faces arrest for statutory rape after innocent photos of him with Daisy surface online. Though authorities eventually drop the charges, the incident demonstrates how quickly their private moments can become weaponized against them. Even in remote locations chosen specifically for privacy, they can't escape the spotlight's glare. Their camping retreat turns chaotic when photographers discover their location, forcing Rike to carry Daisy through a gauntlet of flashing cameras, with her face buried against his chest for protection. Hotel staff leak their room numbers, fans attempt to climb their security fences, and private moments become public property within hours through social media. The constant surveillance takes a measurable toll on their mental well-being. Lily's anxiety intensifies, Lo struggles with sobriety under increased scrutiny, and Rose develops insomnia from the stress of managing their public image. However, they adapt and develop sophisticated coping mechanisms. They create a fortress-like family unit, purchasing a secure compound where they can live together away from prying eyes. They establish strict protocols for trusted staff, implement advanced security systems, and learn to distinguish between the caricatures presented in the media and their authentic selves. Most significantly, they refuse to let public opinion dictate their life choices. When tabloids criticize Rike and Daisy's age gap or question Connor and Rose's compatibility, they stand firm in their relationships. They transform their shared experience under the spotlight into a source of strength, using their platform to address addiction, mental health, and the toxic aspects of celebrity culture, turning their fishbowl existence into an opportunity for meaningful dialogue about privacy and personal autonomy. Physical risk and adventure serve as powerful metaphors throughout the novel, weaving a complex tapestry of personal growth and emotional liberation. Rike, a professional free solo climber who scales sheer rock faces without ropes or harnesses, embodies controlled risk-taking at its most extreme. His passion for climbing represents his fundamental approach to life, facing fears head-on, relying on his own strength, and finding freedom in dangerous places. Through his meticulous preparation and unwavering focus, he demonstrates how calculated risks can lead to extraordinary achievements. For Daisy, risk provides essential escape from her deep-seated trauma and suffocating constraints. She rides motorcycles at dangerous speeds, often pushing past 100 miles per hour on empty desert highways. She jumps from increasingly high bridges into dark waters and seeks adrenaline rushes in increasingly daring ways to feel truly alive. When she stands up on the back of Rike's moving motorcycle, arms outstretched against the wind, it symbolizes her desperate desire to break free from safety and control. I feel like I'm flying, she tells him, her voice carrying both exhilaration and a hint of the pain she's trying to outrun. Their shared love of danger creates a unique and powerful bond. Rike becomes not just a partner, but a mentor, teaching Daisy to channel her reckless impulses into more controlled challenges. He introduces her to proper motorcycle techniques, showing her how to lean into curves and read the road. Their rock climbing sessions begin with basic bouldering and progress to more technical ascents, with Rike emphasizing safety alongside courage. During their transformative road trip across America, they experience the country through a series of carefully chosen adventures, swimming in hidden mountain lakes at dawn, attempting the challenging northwest face of Devil's Tower in Wyoming, and exploring the precarious Red Rock formations in Utah's desert landscape. The novel reaches its climactic height with Rike's ambitious free solo climb of El Capitan in Yosemite, representing the ultimate test of both his physical skill and emotional courage. Standing before the 3,000-foot granite monolith at sunrise, he recalls a Confucius quote that has guided him: "It does not matter how slowly you go, as long as you do not stop." The ascent becomes a meditation on patience, persistence, and the delicate balance between ambition and respect for natural limits. After years of methodical preparation, he successfully completes the Yosemite Triple Crown in 19 grueling hours, a triumph that parallels his emotional journey of overcoming childhood trauma and embracing love despite its inherent risks. This theme of risk-taking extends powerfully to their relationship itself. Loving each other means taking emotional risks that often feel as daunting as any physical challenge. Defying deeply entrenched family expectations, facing intense public scrutiny due to their age difference, and opening themselves to potential heartbreak. Just as Rike climbs without a safety net, they choose to pursue their connection despite the dangers, believing that the view from the summit, the depth and authenticity of their love, is worth the perilous ascent. Their story suggests that the greatest adventures, whether scaling mountains or opening one's heart, require both courage and wisdom to navigate successfully. Throughout the novel, the characters redefine family beyond traditional blood ties. The six main characters, Rike, Daisy, Lo, Lily, Rose, and Connor, create a chosen family based on loyalty, understanding, and mutual support rather than genetics or obligation. Their bond develops organically through shared experiences, late-night conversations, and unwavering support during each other's darkest moments, demonstrating how family can be built through conscious choice and dedication. This theme is particularly significant for Rike, whose biological family has caused him profound pain. His mother, Sarah, exploited Lily's sex addiction for media attention, publishing sensationalized articles and attempting to profit from her vulnerability. His father, Jonathan, abandoned him as a child, leaving deep emotional scars that manifested in Rike's initial difficulty forming close relationships. Yet by the novel's end, Rike has created meaningful connections with his half-brother Lo, found acceptance from Lily and her sisters, and even begun tentatively rebuilding relationships with his parents, though always maintaining healthy boundaries and prioritizing his chosen family's well-being. The evolution of this chosen family reaches a pivotal moment when Lo suggests they all move in together to help Daisy feel safer following her traumatic experiences. Despite their different personalities, Connor's calculated precision, Rose's sharp perfectionism, Lily's anxious energy, Lo's sardonic wit, Rike's blunt honesty, and Daisy's free spirit, they unite to support her healing. Their communal living arrangement transforms from a practical solution into a profound statement about chosen family. As Daisy observes, they're all living together like college students despite being in their 20s with babies on the way. But beneath this casual observation lies a deeper truth about their interdependence and commitment to each other. This family expands to include future generations, with Rose pregnant with Connor's child and Lily expecting Lo's baby. These pregnancies symbolize hope and continuity, suggesting their chosen family will extend beyond their own generation. When Lo expresses concern about his future child competing with Connor's, it reveals how deeply intertwined their lives have become. Their children will be raised not just as cousins, but as siblings in spirit, surrounded by multiple parental figures who will love them equally. The novel concludes with this makeshift family firmly established in their shared home, creating new traditions and support systems. They engage in impromptu snowball fights in the backyard, spend hours debating baby names around the kitchen table, and rally together through ongoing challenges, from Lily's recovery journey to Rose's pregnancy complications. In the final scene, as Rose and Connor discuss their baby's future, while Lo and Lily join the conversation with their own hopes and fears, Daisy reflects on how they've created something unique and valuable, a family defined by choice rather than circumstance, bound by love rather than obligation. Their story demonstrates that true family isn't determined by DNA, but daily choices to show up for each other, celebrate victories together, and weather storms as one unit. The novel's title provides its central metaphor. Daisy as a hothouse flower who needs both protection and freedom to thrive. Like a rare orchid that requires precise environmental conditions, she embodies a delicate balance of seemingly contradictory needs: adventure and security, independence and connection, wildness and tenderness. This metaphor resonates throughout the narrative, reflecting not just Daisy's character, but the complex dynamics of healing and growth. Reich recognizes this duality in her nature with remarkable insight. After their emotional breakthrough on the bridge, a pivotal scene where Daisy finally reveals her deepest fears, he carries her to safety, calling her his hothouse flower, who needs both adventure and security to flourish. He understands that her wild spirit, manifested in her love for extreme sports and spontaneous adventures, doesn't negate her vulnerability. Rather, they're complementary aspects of her complex personality. Her fearlessness in physical challenges contrasts poignantly with her emotional fragility, especially regarding her family dynamics and past trauma. This metaphor extends beautifully to their evolving relationship. Reich provides the greenhouse, a safe space where Daisy can be authentic without judgment or pretense. His apartment becomes both a sanctuary and a launching pad for their adventures. He offers protection without confinement, encouraging her growth while respecting her autonomy. When he tells her he wants to experience everything life has to offer with her, traveling together after climbs, he envisions a partnership that balances high-stakes adventure with deep emotional intimacy. Their shared passion for rock climbing becomes a perfect metaphor for their relationship, requiring trust, communication, and a delicate balance between risk-taking and safety. Daisy's journey involves accepting both her strength and vulnerability, a process that unfolds gradually throughout the novel. Initially, she hides her trauma behind a perpetually cheerful facade and risky behavior, believing vulnerability equals weakness. Through her deepening relationship with Reich and reconnection with her sisters, particularly during late-night conversations and family gatherings, she learns that true strength includes acknowledging pain and asking for help. By the novel's end, she's sleeping better not because her trauma has disappeared, but because she's surrounded by people who understand and support her complete self. The hothouse flower metaphor ultimately represents the delicate balance all the characters seek between risk and safety, independence and connection, past wounds and future possibilities. Like rare blooms that require specific conditions to thrive, they create an environment where each can flourish without sacrificing their authentic selves. This is evident in the way the family dynamics evolve, with each member learning to support while respecting boundaries. As Reich promises Daisy a life without restraints at 150 miles per hour, they embrace a future that honors both their wild spirits and their need for roots, a perfect equilibrium between protection and freedom, much like the delicate ecosystem of a greenhouse.